The choices you make with your lifestyle, your money, every single day influence your future. Become informed. Act with purpose. Build your tomorrow. This podcast is dedicated to sharing ideas that you can use to take ownership of your financial future. Most Americans have little or no net worth. By being purposeful with what we earn, I believe we can change that. Welcome to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Salutations, greetings, and hello. My name is Stephen Briggs. I am the owner of Briggs Financial. Welcome to Money is Personal, episode number 17, Spending Regrets and How to Fix Them. I don't know about you, but I am a fan of going to the mall. Now, for as much as I talk about discretionary spending and avoiding it and all the different things we've talked through on the podcast, past, present, and I'm assuming in the future, I really do enjoy being in retail stores and shopping and that whole thing. I worked in retail for a number of years before graduating college. And even after college, I've had various experiences in retail over the years. And for me, for whatever reason, the whole bustle of the mall and window shopping and looking at how things are displayed and I nerd out on that a little bit. I'm not much of a people watcher. My wife is much more of a people watcher. She loves seeing all the people and all of that. But for me, it's more about seeing how things are kind of, like I said, things are marketed and so I get some shot ideas occasionally for a present for somebody or that sort of thing. I don't buy much usually at the mall, but I just enjoy the experience of being out there and like I said, the open area, sometimes the lights, the holiday times, it's beautiful. You have all the different lights and displays and whatnot. But when you're in the mall and usually I'm walking along and at some point I will smell something. And it smells familiar to me. It smells like somebody has just made cinnamon rolls. And I get that whiff and that smell, and you just take that aroma in your nose, and you're like, oh, that smells good. We must be near a Cinnabon. Of course we're near a Cinnabon, because the whole place will smell like cinnamon rolls. If you're within a 100-foot radius, I have to believe this is part of their marketing ploy. You're within a... If they pump... I'd be curious to know if they pump air out into the hall, into the, into the mall that smells like Cinnabon, because the bottom line is you get within 100 feet of the place, and you smell cinnamon rolls for years. And you're just going, yep, we're near a Cinnabon. And I think of all the gooey and the warmth and the sweetness and all the wonderful things. And there's a Cinnabon. And you get there and you're like, you know, it sounds really good. You weren't thinking you were all that hungry at all. You may have had lunch just a little bit ago. And yet, 2:30 in the afternoon, I don't have coffee in front of me. It's not morning. It's not breakfast. But I smell Cinnabon. And I like Cinnabon. It's really good. So you go over and pay them the money, and you have the Cinnabon, and then you're eating it, and you're like, oh, I'm getting full. Oh, wow, there's a lot of sugar in this thing. And by the time you're done, you feel like you're rolling around the rest of the mall like a Cinnabon. and maybe later you get thinking about it and going, what? I wasn't even hungry. Why did I have that Cinnabon? What happened here? And the thing is, when we go about making... spending decisions, and when we make decisions about our money in general, we'd like to think that our money decisions are all very logical. That's why every year at New Year's time, you'll have people making New Year's resolutions to save more money, and we're going to get on a budget. And it's like two-thirds of adults say they have a budget. Two-thirds of adults say, I have a budget. But the problem is that you can have a budget all day long. Is a budget actually how you make decisions when it comes to your behaviors and how you spend money? The answer is, objectively, for the broad population of people, no, it isn't. Not even close. And so it's actually a very different set of reasons that lead us to, for example, making that Cinnabon purchase, which is relatively innocuous in its own right. But when you have many of those Cinnabon purchases or other bigger purchases that are affected by something other than logic and a budget, that we find ourselves putting ourselves into some financial jeopardy. So the thing is, and so this episode is going to take a look at why exactly that actually happens and what we can do about it. In order to dig into this, I want to dig actually at first into and give you some information on a little bit of science, neuroscience and how our brains work. Now, I'm not going to get too hyper-technical with this because, you know, digging deep into research on this, our brains are, you know, there are systems of activity for how our brains work, but you can't think of it in the same sense that your feet have a particular function or that your lungs have a particular function. Our different parts of the brain are leveraged in a variety of different systems and ways, and they do a variety of different things. So when I talk about this, I want to make sure that we're limiting this to this conversation and not someone pointing at me and said, well, you said the thalamus only does this. Well, that's just not true. The thalamus may only do something in particular for the purpose of this discussion. So keep in mind that this kind of works a little bit differently, or at least that's where our theories are pulled toward. When we take in inputs, like I smell Cinnabon, that's taken in, you know, through your nose, and you sense that, but that information goes to the thalamus, in the center part of your brain, and that thalamus basically acts like a switchboard, and so it takes that information, and it's going to send it to several different places, but a couple that we're going to focus on today. One place it sends it to is your cortex, and your cortex is responsible for, especially your prefrontal cortex, is responsible for long-term logical decisions, rational thinking. That same signal is also sent to another part of your brain called the amygdala. And the amygdala is responsible for short-term, quick decisions, reactions, fight or flight, and a reward system. So when the, that you smell that and you smell that Cinnabon, that prefrontal cortex is kind of processing what Cinnabon means to you right now. You haven't thought about the fact that you just ate 2 hours ago. But that amygdala is like, you know, boy, you could really go for a Cinnabon right now. You like Cinnabon and hey, I think you feel a little hungry too. And so what happens is that emotional part's like, I would really like a treat. Your amygdala is going like, it's treat time, and Cinnabon sounds like a great plan. And so what happens is your amygdala has chemicals in it that are faster than how your prefrontal cortex works. Those chemicals respond more slowly. So you then go up to the, immediately go to the Cinnabon, and your amygdala is taken over, and you purchase the Cinnabon, and you eat it, and you're enjoying it, right? And then later, maybe, your prefrontal cortex catches up and says, you weren't hungry. Did you really need to spend $5 or $6 on Cinnabon? Let alone if you have your family with you, then it was like a $20 purchase or whatever. And going, I probably really didn't need to spend that. And you feel bad about it. But that, from a brain chemistry standpoint, is what's happened. Now, if given enough time, what happens is that prefrontal cortex and its chemicals actually, because the amygdala, what it does is it sends receptors to basically prevent your prefrontal cortex from sending signals. So block that out. I'm first and I have a priority. You get to drive through and your prefrontal cortex gets to wait. Given enough time, your prefrontal cortex catches up and says, hey, I'm here too. And it will actually trump the amygdala in terms of long-term thinking and rational thinking. But in that case, your emotional has already taken over and you've paid and you're done. So you think about how powerful that is. And it's not just Cinnabon at the mall. But it's also, you pass by a Starbucks and you'll immediately think of Starbucks with pick-me-up. But even going and being near a Starbucks can also make you think, hey, I'm kind of tired. You kind of recognize, maybe it wasn't a conscious problem before, but when you see it, you think pick-me-up and go, I need a pick-me-up. And so you pull it, drive in, or you walk in and you get your pick-me-up. Or you look at your clock in the car. Let's say you're driving, you're commuting, or going from one appointment to the next. And you take a look and you see, it's 12:30 in the afternoon. Wait, that's when lunchtime is. Well, now I'm hungry. And then you see a Taco Bell. And you're like, wow, it's 12:30. And I like Taco Bell. So I'm going to go and pull into the Taco Bell. And I'm going to have, or whatever fast food restaurant of choice. You're like, yeah, Taco Bell. Briggs, what you doing? Okay, pull into your McDonald's. Pull into your, whatever that be. Your Whataburger. Whatever your favorite joint is. And you grab that burger and you're out. And you don't even think, you know. And I even get caught with this one sometimes. I have to be really conscious about it. You think, financial planner, shouldn't you be more disciplined? I'm like, I'm human too, and I'm a big guy, and I like food. Easy there. But, I'll be driving to an appointment, and it takes conscious effort to think, you know, I'm only 20 minutes away from home, and I've got food in my fridge. I mean, even coming back before recording this podcast, I was coming from a business meeting to my office to do this podcast, and even in that 10-15 minute drive, I thought, well, it's nearly lunchtime, and Buffalo Wild Wings has got a wing special today, and I like wings. I haven't had wings in a long time. I'm thinking, I've got barbecue ribs in the, you know, in my fridge. I can just microwave those. Well, again, I mean, I'm even getting barbecue still. It didn't matter where I got it from. I could go spend $15 at B-Dubs, or I could go home, and I still thought about just going in and having it made for me. And I had to consciously think, no, I'm not going to do that. But the real kicker of all this is that when you cave in, a couple of things happens. One, when you eat food, your brain is rewarded, or it releases a chemical called dopamine. And dopamine, whenever you do something that you find satisfaction in, and food is usually a trigger, your brain releases dopamine and you feel pleasure. It's a high. It is a chemical high. You also release dopamine when you spend money on things. So now you've got two base, you know, kind of forms of high going. One from spending and getting something. And second from eating and enjoying that thing. And then it gets worse. Because you have all the positive feelings associated with eating good food. You smell it. You can touch it. You can look at it. If you're at a Mexican restaurant, who doesn't enjoy going to a Mexican restaurant and hearing the sizzle of fajita? You hear that pan sizzle. You're like, man, it's eating time. I want that. And it looks good. It's on that plate. You bring that hot skillet out. It's a marketing ploy, and it works. Because why eat an $8 plain old thing of tacos when you can spend $14 or $15 and get the really cool sizzle? That's how people make that choice. And they bring it out and there's a whole procession to it. And you see all of this and you taste it and you feel it and it's so good. And all these good feelings are what you're paying for. And meanwhile, payment has revolutionized in such a way that we've removed most, if not all, the pain points of what you're losing. You don't have to get out cash and hand someone something anymore. You don't feel like you're losing something you have. At worst now, it's here's my credit card. Oh, wait, when I pull my credit card out, and it's tricky because I have a card that I do have in particular, it feels a lot heavier than my other cards. And the card company actually put a metal weight inside my card to make it feel heavier so that when I handed it to someone, it felt more important. They felt that and go, ooh, big spender, must have a lot of money, big heavy card like that. I've gotten that reaction before. And I laugh because I know why they think that, because there's this metal weight sitting in the in this card. But at the end of the day, I'm not a terribly big spender, but but the perception is there. And again, when someone compliments you, there's a little rush attached to it. Or on the flip side, if you're going to your Starbucks or go through a drive-thru, you can just pay with your mobile. You don't even have to get money out at all. You don't even have to get a card out at all. You go ahead, take that phone, and you scan it, and that's the end of it. And the thing about it is it's kind of devilish because all of us, for the most part, enjoy being on our phone. We do social things on our phone. We play games on our phone. We have so much fun interacting with this device. And as I pick mine up, despite doing an audio podcast, I pick my phone up to demonstrate this. We enjoy that activity. We love that touch and feel that we don't associate the payment as a negative thing. We don't feel like anything got taken away. So all those positive feelings, none of the negative feelings, all happening at once and all completely circumventing your rational, logical part of your brain. And then the high wears off. Lunch is done. You begin digesting. The afternoon begins. 2-3 in the afternoon, you're like, man, that was a big meal. And why did I spend $15, $20 on that? That was, or later when you get home, you're just like, I don't even feel like dinner. I said, why did I spend so much money? Or maybe you don't think about it right then and there, but you see the credit card bill and go, how did I spend so much? And you look, boy, I mean, $20 on lunch, $15, you know, it just adds up. I was talking to some, you know, someone about their finances, and we were doing some napkin math. And I was asking him about their food spending. Oh, I spent a couple $100 on groceries. And I said, okay. So how about your lunch spending? And they said, I go out most days for lunch. I sat there and said, okay, so about $300 a month for lunch. And they sat there and went, they were about ready to correct me. And then they kind of sat there and thought about it, went, oh yeah, I guess I do spend that much. And it kind of dawned on them, they, you know, without me even criticizing, they kind of identified that, oh, I've gotten into a big habit there. And that habit's costing me more money than I even thought about because I haven't thought about it at all. I just enjoy, I always get lunch out every day. So it's interesting how these feelings turn into habits, which then turn into line items that may or may not have ever been on that budget and may or may not even be a conscious decision anymore. Just things we do. You don't think about breathing, you just do it. Well, you don't think about packing a lunch, you just go out every day. And then you see the cost of that, and that may make you start thinking about it. What would an extra $350 a month do for you? For most people, it'd fill up a pretty decent portion of a retirement account for the year. That's some good money that could potentially go that way, or into savings, or debt reduction, a number of things. Now, the thing is, I focus so far on small purchases, but this stuff doesn't just affect small purchases. It also affects us in some very major purchases as well. And I'm going to give you a good example or a couple of good examples. I mean, when you sit there at home and something that you need to have work breaks down, the refrigerator breaks again, the dishwasher breaks again. It can get frustrating to have someone come out and repair or replace a part. And so many times people, especially knowing things like free delivery, free installation, favorable financing, go, screw it. I really don't want to deal with the hassle of having someone come out, fix this thing. It's still old. I feel like I'm throwing my money away. And so, without really doing a whole lot of research or thinking behind their decision, they just go and buy a brand new item, whatever that thing is. Even if it's under warranty, turns out. They don't even want to call the warranty. They're just like, this is a lemon. I just won't buy this brand again. So they're not even taking advantage of the things that they would normally take advantage of. They just go out, buy the thing. And again, this is where you get frustrated. That amygdala jumps in and says, that's a threat. I don't want to wash my own dishes. or hey, we've got food in this fridge and we got to deal with it right now. Notwithstanding that there may be, you know, be able to, you know, whether ask a neighbor or get some bags of ice, you know, you could refrigerate the food for a period of time while thinking of a solution, instead of going down to the local gas station, spending a few bucks on some ice and thinking for a bit about what to do about this and researching options. Now we're just going to go to the local Home Depot or Lowe's, and that's how we're going to fix this. It may not have needed to cost nearly that much. May not have needed to nearly basically waste something at, hey, although, you know, maybe it was just something's burnt out, and maybe, yeah, it costs 100 or 150 bucks to replace it, but far better than buying a new fridge. And of course, when you go and buy that new fridge or new TV, and I just went through buying a new TV, I'll talk about that in a minute, but the compressing feelings of, I can't go without that, I don't want to hassle with looking at 17 different options. I just need to get the stress out. That's your amygdala working at full throttle. And then you go and end up buying a new fridge that, you know, maybe you could or maybe you don't, you know, even if you could afford it, did you want to buy it? Did you really long-term want to have to pay for that? Maybe yes, maybe no. But your prefrontal cortex was not consulted in that decision. This wasn't a long-term purchase. This was a, I feel like this now, and I dealt with it. Okay. A few months ago, 3 months ago, actually, I was in my office working. And behind me, on the opposite side of the wall, back wall of my office, hangs a television. And you know, it was running CNBC, and as I was listening, you know, I could hear it from out here, but as I'm sitting here working and listening, I heard a loud pop, just a, and then about a second later or two, I started to smell smoke. I started to smell electrical smoke, and I went, oh, that cannot be good. So I ran in, and the first thing I did, knowing it had to have come from behind the wall, was I shut down the power on the entire system back there. I have my electronics on a power strip. Pull the power strip immediately. By the way, first thing you do when an electronic decides to blow up on you is you cut the power, either at the break. If it's safe enough, do it at the, you know, unplugging it's quickest probably. But if you can't do that safely, you cut it at the breaker. Then, once that's dealt with, figuring out what actually popped, and I noticed the TV was off, and I went, oh, no. And I could actually see a little of smoke coming out of the back of it once I looked up. Pulled the TV off the wall, and sure enough, the capacitor where the power supply is had completely melted. And so, researching very quickly my 7-8-year-old Samsung TV, getting that part replaced is going to be $150. And that's without including labor or anything. And I thought about that. And I went, well, that's a lot of money on an old on a TV that's had some years. So I started to look, and I went, you know, I'm probably going to need to look at a new TV. But I don't have to have. I thought about this, and at first I thought, well, I really don't want to go without one. And I thought about it, and I went, you know, we stream a fair amount of what we watch. I have books. I have other ways of entertainment. By having just pausing just a bit instead of just running down to Best Buy and just immediately buying a TV and calling it a day, which in outcomes would not have been the most miserable decision, I said, you know, I can take a break on this. You know, I can pause. Let's assess a little bit here. What TV do we actually want, and how much do we want to pay for it? So my wife got home a little bit later in the day, and she, you know, I told her what happened, and you know, she was disappointed as well. We do like to watch movies together, we do like to watch shows together, and it kind of stunk. But she was like, you know, this'll be okay. And I said, all right, well, that's a great attitude to have. So I talked about, well, what do we want in a TV? After a few minutes of talking, she and I agreed we really didn't want anything different than what we had. We have 55-inch TV, it hangs on the wall. If I could find another 55-inch TV that just hangs on the wall like that one did, that'd be great. And I'm like, I haven't even shopped for TVs in forever. I said, how much do you think we should spend? And we both agreed that we honestly just didn't want to spend more than $500. Like, whether the market, whether that was actually going to fit the market or not was immaterial. We were both in agreement that if the television was more than $500, we would find an alternative means of viewing the things we wanted to watch. But we weren't interested in spending a lot of money on a television. It just wasn't a massive priority. And we, you know, we were perfectly happy with what we had before. Then why chase a bunch of upgrades and new technology? And frankly, we were very happy not having before. And, you know, unless there was something crazy that we hadn't taken it, you know, into consideration, we were both kind of a mindset that would just try to replace what we had. So I went to the Best Buy, and I did notice there was some new technology on screens and whatnot. But I was looking at going, this isn't anything in particular that, you know, would change my viewing habits. And I was looking at some of them, and there was just such a big price difference. I'm going, wow, I could pay, you know, a few hundred dollars for a new TV that does a lot. You know, it was better than the one I had. Or I could spend three times as much to have the newest, latest, fanciest. And after having had that conversation with my wife and having a chance to think about it, when I went into Best Buy to look at those televisions, that wasn't my amygdala running anymore. My amygdala was running in the first 30 minutes of the smoke and getting it off the wall and everything else. But now my prefrontal cortex had caught up. And I said, you know, I don't actually need to, we don't have to even buy anything today. I looked at their prices. I said, these are okay. But they compared well with what I saw online. And I said, you know, there's nothing here that's that special. I don't see a particularly good sale. We're coming up on the holidays. We can wait. And so we did. And so for about a week and a half or so, we didn't have a TV on the wall at all. And, you know, was it a pain? Sure, we wanted to watch some things together. But it wasn't the end of the world. We found different stuff to do. And then as I was researching, you know, like I said, a week and a half later, I found it, you know, I asked some friends what TVs they had. I looked online at reviews a little bit. And then I found, you know, just off, you know, chance, a really nice price on a television on Walmart's website. I'm not a big Walmart shopper, but there it was. There is a TV that matched our specifications. That was everything, you know, we wanted from it. A Vizio TV, and it was at the time $348, I think it was. 55-inch TV, HDR, all these things. I went, I think we found it. The price is much better than what I've seen from other places. It's not a Black Friday sale, because this was pre-Black Friday. But I said, I'm going to call my wife and just see if this makes sense to her. And I ran her through it over her lunch hour. She said, yeah, that sounds great. And so that afternoon, ended up picking up that TV. That TV, 3 days later, went from $348 to $378. It never got lower over the course of the holiday season and was probably the best deal on TVs, period, or one of the best the entire holiday season. Because I checked. I went through. I said, okay, let's see if I made a bad decision here. And I was looking at technology pages. I was looking at you know, various big box retailers. And now we just did good. And so by kind of having an objective mindset about it, not getting too emotionally drummed up and feeling like I have to go and save the day by having a TV in the living room by the time my wife got home, probably saved $200 and got a better TV that fit us and our lifestyle. And we're very happy with it. Now, I will report in a year from now if the TV has gone, you know, blown itself up or whatever, and I had to go, you know, warranty or replace or whatever. I might be eating a little crow, but so far it's been perfect. That's pretty cool. But I avoided, you know, I thought about getting another Samsung. I thought there were a number of things I thought about in that decision-making process. And at the end of the day, by giving myself enough time and giving my brain enough time to catch up, found a deal that was 150, almost 40% off of our budget. And, you know, or 30% off our budget, rather, without, and it did everything, it does everything we want it to do, and more. Well, that's pretty cool. It's great when you let that side catch up. You end up, you know, many times getting a much better outcome than making that snap decision. Now, that's not to say all reactionary snap decisions are bad. An example, I was standing on a street corner, waiting to cross the street in downtown Chicago, when suddenly a car, instead of turning the corner, decided to clip the corner, cut across the corner that I'm standing on. And I saw the car, and I saw it angle toward me suddenly, and my immediate thought was, that's going to hit me. And that amygdala kicked into gear, and despite my stout appearance, I jumped back pretty quickly, and the car narrowly missed hitting me. Your amygdala is not a bad thing. That fight or flight thing is kind of important for actual survival. The challenge is to try to rein that in when it's really not actually a moment of fight or flight, when it's not really survival and it's just an emotional reaction to something that's gone on. I said this could also happen in bigger purchases, and I brought up a TV, but I want to bring up something a little bit bigger than a television. I'm going to put you through a scenario here. You're driving your car, and you notice that you're having real issues getting any amount of acceleration. You take the car into the shop, and they discover that you need a really major repair, and it's going to cost you money. They don't know exactly how much yet. They need to go completely through it, but they're looking at going, this isn't going to be simple. We're going to have to tear this thing apart. You've had the car for a while, and it's had its issues over the years. It's got some miles on it, and you've kind of been wanting a new car for a while, but you've put it off. You've been disciplined. You've been good. Maybe you've been working with a financial planner, like this person had. But while they're looking at it, looking at the car, dealer comes up and says, hey, I'd like you to talk with my salesperson here. I know you're not necessarily in the market to buy. We'll get you a quote, but... you got some time to kill here. Why don't you take a look at what we got a little bit? You think, well, taking a look at something hasn't cost me anything, sure. So then you look around and you see there are a couple cars that, yeah, you may have been eyeing on or you may actually really like. And the dealer is talking with you about what you like about, what car, what you want in a car. And of course, you're gushing to tell them because you've been putting it off and you don't want to buy it. You've been disciplined. You've been good. But your car is sitting there in shambles. So it's easy to talk about, well, these are the things I kind of want and like. And so they're like, hey, how about this car? Let's take it for a test drive. And you take it for a test drive and it feels so good. You got a new car under you. You know it's going to be reliable. The smell. Oh, the new car smell. Oh, practically an aphrodisiac. And it has the new technology. It has the Bluetooth. It reads your texts to you. It does, you can automatically make calls super easy. It's got XM built in. But this car is kind of expensive. Way outside the budget you were kind of thinking about. But here's the thing. I mean, dealer's like, you know what? I know it's expensive, but let me help about a bit. I don't care what the repair shop says about your car. We're going to give you at least $2,500 for that thing, no matter how bad a shape it is. And we've got some really great financing. We got some 0% financing for 72 months, or, we got a really good rate even on an 84-month loan. That's a new thing, by the way, the 84-month loan. So the payment shouldn't be as bad. And so you get thinking about it. You're like, I have been wanting a new car. And these terms are really good, and I'm even getting some value. Instead of me paying in for that car repair, they're going to pay me for that car repair. Well, that's kind of cool. And so, and then as you sit down and really start thinking about it, they go, at the same time, you've had some real issues with that car. We don't do lemons around here, so it costs a little bit extra, but we have an extended warranty. So if anything happens to the drivetrain or some of these other areas, we'll cover that. Maybe it's another $30 a month of the loan. So the thing is, over this, few hours, you've had this, you've had this series of emotions happen to you, basically. You had the lows of your, car being a pain in the butt and having problems. The perception of a large liability, and maybe a large liability in terms of, especially if it is a major system. And then you've immediately... You get to contrast that with the immediate highs of looking at new cars, going for the test drive, even the finances look better, and they're going to pay you for your lousy car. And you feel great about it, and you sign on the line, and you go home, and you're going, man, I've got a new car. And a couple days go by, and you like your new shiny car, or your partner gets home, and you're like, you did what? Did you even talk to me? Well, no, I mean, I'm pretty good with money. Like, we got a really good deal here. I mean, aren't you, I got a good deal. I got money for that junker car. Aren't you happy about that? But what did you end up with? You still have a car to drive, one way or the other, whether you did the repairs or bought the new car, you're still going to have a car to drive, right? But this new one comes with a big new payment each month. And your insurance goes up. It's going to be a much higher premium for a new car that's not paid off like that. And even if the old car had issues periodically, if you budget an amount each month and save some money aside for repairs, the difference in the cost of the repairs versus the loan and that and having that, and it's not just the difference in the cost, it's also what could that money have been doing instead? So even if you had to put $150 a month into your car just to keep it up, but your new car loan is $400 or $500 a month, that extra $250, $350, imagine what it could be doing if it was, even in an index fund, earning money for you instead of being spent paying off a depreciating asset, because as you drive that car, the value of it goes down. As time goes on, the value of it goes down. We have this loan for how long? And what about the other priorities that may have been on top of that? Like, hey, we have this loan forever. Our insurance is up. What about our house? What if we need, what about our retirement savings or our kids' school? What if costs keep going up? What if we get sick? What if one or both of us loses our job? Oh. And you can put another word in front of that O after that. Oh. That's a big deal. And the only way you get out from that situation at that point is to sell the car at a loss and take the pain in terms of the loan, pay the loan entirely, or eventually you don't pay the loan and the car gets repossessed and your credit goes to snot. None of these things are good. You thought you were being bright. And even if they come back with, hey, you need a new engine for this car, did you really need the brand new one? Could you found a car with decent miles that had even some of the features you wanted and paid $10,000 or $12,000 instead? Trade that. They'll still take the junker in for $2,500 if you buy used, by the way. And maybe you walk out with a $6,000 loan or an $8,000 loan. The insurance premium doesn't go up a ton. Goes up some, but not nearly as much as the brand new car. You end up with a loan that's under $200 a month on a car that is going to be more reliable. Maybe it's a newer car with better features, less mileage. Okay. That you can do. And there's nothing to say, by the way, that you had to get it done that day. Again, in the solution set of all things, you calm down off that high and think about it. You could rent a car. Go home. Rent one for a week. Oh, that's going to cost a couple hundred dollars. Better than spending $30,000 or more on a vehicle that you can't actually afford. You spend that couple $100 a week, drive around a loaner, and think what your next step is. Give yourself time. And so that gets into this idea, this big thought for, well, he's been talking for nearly 40 minutes. The big idea behind this. Lifestyle and behavior and habit will override rational thought and reasoning unless you build different habits and different procedures that become the new snap decision. In that car situation, we have a standing agreement in our house that if a decision is less than, or is, three-digit decision or more, we consult each other. So even on a $100 purchase, I talk to my wife to see if it's okay. Because it's her money too. Now, let's say you don't have a wife or a husband to consult. Do you have a friend? I hope you have a friend at least. If you don't have a friend to talk, you email me. I will be your friend. I will be your friend. You email me, Stephen@BriggsWealth.com, and say, Stephen, I'm thinking of buying this. What do you think? And I'll tell you straight up if it's a good or a bad idea. No charge. No charge. You got it. I'll be that friend for you. Well, you find somebody to help you be accountable and say, you know, and my wife does a great job with that, and we do that vice versa. It's like, you know, I'm really thinking about this. And sometimes that answer is, yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense to me. But what you're doing in that situation is you might be emotionally engaged and ramped up, but chances are the other person isn't, or at least isn't engaged in your situation. So at least one of the two of you is going to be in a logical frame of thought and can immediately go, whoa, let's back up a second. And so some teamwork in that regard is a great way to at least put the brakes on a bit before helping you, to help you make a better decision. The second way you can do this is say, at particular spending limits, I won't make a decision immediately. So, for example, and maybe it's a matter of, if you've committed, for example, regardless what the bill is, I'm going to repair this car. Okay. And you're probably, whether it's a $300 bill or a $700 bill, maybe you look at that $700 and go, I'm going to research a little bit and make sure that's the best price I can get. But you're looking at going, okay, I'm willing up to a point to do this. But maybe when you're other shopping or other things, again, you'll hit, you know, set a number where you go, I'm not willing to spend that type of money without getting out of the store, going home, thinking about it, and coming back at least a day later. Still wanting that thing and still willing to pay what it's being sold for. Namely, this gives you time to research. But the thing from an emotional and a behavioral point of view is that amygdala calms down. Let your prefrontal cortex actually do work on this. When it comes to some of the smaller decisions, it becomes really important to have a game plan to, as much as possible, avoid putting yourself in a position where that amygdala could kick in. For example, I go back to the lunch example where he said, well, I could go get Buffalo Wild Wings or eat ribs at home. The fact that I had a plan for my lunch is what swayed me to not go out for lunch today. Where I said, I really want to go out for chicken, but I have a lunch ready to go at the office. I'm ready, you know, there it is. And because I had a plan, I did not go with the emotional side. The rational side reacted as well and said, no, you have a plan for this. And so what ends up happening is if you have a plan for that often enough or a means of reacting, for example, and maybe I didn't have a plan for lunch, but I had a Nutri-Grain bar in the console of my car or a bag of almonds or something inside my desk, I could go, hey, I'm feeling hungry. I see the B-dubs and I know better. I have these almonds here and I can eat those instead. So again, you're actually playing into the reactionary side by having a reaction that gives you a better outcome than spending $15, $20 on lunch every day. Another way to plan around this is to have additional, you know, ingredients or things you need to make lunch. You know, I'm hungry, I forgot my lunch, or I forgot coffee this morning. I have a way of making coffee at the office. Or I have a way of making lunch in the office. May not be the best lunch, may not be the most awesome, but I really can't spend $20 or $15 on lunch. Because I have other things that are way more important in my life than that meal. And it's not that that one meal, that one Jimmy John's, or that one Grubhub alone will prevent your kids from having funding for their college education or prevent you from retiring before 85. But it's death by a thousand paper cuts. It's all the lunches and all the coffees and all the meals and all the things, layer upon layer, that end up wiping out bank accounts and wiping out the ability to build wealth and build the things you want to build for the long term. It's also a matter of when you get into those big pressure decisions, you see a house that you love, you know, really, really love, and you decide you want to go and put a bid up. And in this housing market, it can be very competitive. It can push that in that regard. And it's not to say don't make that bid, but do the homework ahead of time so that when you go in, you have a rational idea of this is what we're looking at, and this is what we're willing to pay for what we're looking at, and have those, you know, fence posts already made. The good news about all of this is that our brain has one other quality that I have not talked about, which is neuroplasticity. What this is, this neuroplasticity, is that we have a brain that's constantly changing. It's creating new neural pathways, changing habits, changing lifestyles. When we change these things, we will start to react and think differently in these situations. Our brains are made to adapt our entire lives. That's a really cool thing about how we're wired. And so when you start making better spending decisions on an impulsive side and start pushing away that impulse or start circumventing that impulse, either by having alternative thinking on what, you know, what a good purchase is, or checking in with people and building that as a process. When you do those things, you're going to start catching yourself before ever feeling like you're under pressure. It will become easier and easier over time as you start to build momentum. Now, I will tell you, you will have to be very deliberate and intentional. And you're not always going to get it right when it comes to those initial impulses. It can take years. Let me repeat that. This can take years to master. I'm not perfect at this. Been doing this a while. I'm not perfect at this. I will sometimes make impulsive decisions. Thankfully, not on large ticket things. I'm very, I have grown very wary of that type of decision. I finally, my wife and I finally bought new phones after 3.5 years of beating up ones to the point where they were mechanically falling apart. Okay, maybe time for Frugal to have to accept reality that we actually need a new item around here occasionally. But by the same token, I wasn't that way a decade ago. A decade ago, I bought a new washer and dryer for, you know, the house I was in. I was buying all sorts of things that seemed very adult-like and seemed very logical and sensible, and they weren't things I could afford, and they weren't things I needed to afford. And a few months after I made those purchases, I was out of a job in the middle of one of the worst economic events in history, the largest economic recession in nearly 100 years. And 6 months before, I couldn't see that writing on the wall. I didn't know any better. And there I was. And I can't tell you when that next event will be or when something will happen in your life that'll be negative. You know, Murphy tends to be pretty mean in that Murphy never schedules in advance and sometimes makes multiple house calls on the same day or in the same week or month. And it's not fun to deal with. But by having a mindset and recognizing that physiologically, we will tend to make snap decisions, but we can program ourselves and put ourselves in positions to either make better snap decisions by slowing ourselves down in terms of our decision-making, either through training that over time, and through adding people and adding rules to these processes so that, hey, that purchase is over $100. I need to talk to my partner, or I need to talk to my friend. And if the salesperson sits there and says, well, you can't make a decision for yourself, you could just reply, yeah, I can't. You're correct. I can't do that. And walk off. And by the way, people do that. Don't do business with them. Don't reward that nonsense. Don't reward a pressure tactic like that. But it's okay. Phone a friend. Team game here. We're all here to help win. And like I said, if you sit there and say, I don't have a friend I could talk to about this stuff, and you send me an email, and I'm happy to sit here and help you out with that one, say, okay, yes, this makes sense to me, or no, or have you thought about this instead? It may not, or not yet. Those are all potential options in that decision-making process. So, to reiterate in closing, keep in mind that lifestyle and behavior will override rational thought and reasoning unless you build habits that become the new snap decision, be it new habits in terms of how you react in pressure situations or/and building processes to slow down the decision-making process to give your prefrontal cortex time to catch up so that you can make the best, most logical decision for yourself and then do that thing instead. On that note, thank you for listening to episode 17, Spending Regrets and How to Fix Them. Please share this podcast with family and friends and people you know that would enjoy some good financial education here. Follow us on Instagram, like us on Facebook, and if you have any questions or would about anything we're covering here, please don't hesitate to ask Stephen@BriggsWealth.com. Thank you so much for listening. Have a terrific week, and we'll catch you next time. Take care. Thank you for listening to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Please follow Briggs Financial on Instagram and Facebook for more terrific personal financial stories and ideas. And check out our firm's website at www.briggswealth.com to schedule a free consultation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This information is provided for informational and education purposes only. Briggs Financial believes the information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but does not guarantee the accuracy of the information provided. This information is not meant to be a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making financial or investment decisions, and does not constitute a recommendation. Please note that the information provided may include references to concepts that have legal, accounting, and tax implications. It is not to be construed as legal, accounting, or tax advice, and is provided as general information to you to assist in understanding the issues discussed. Briggs Financial does not give tax, legal, or accounting advice. This information is not meant as financial or investment advice pertaining to your personal situation. The selection of appropriate investment or planning options and/or strategies should be made on an individual basis after consultation with appropriate legal, tax, and financial advisors. Nothing contained herein is intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any product or service mentioned, and they may not be suitable for all investors.